And welcome to 4Panel. We are the Geek Show show all about comic books.
And manga, don't forget.
And manga.
Yeah, manga always gets ignored.
Yep. Not by me, I love the manga.
Yes, yes.
I just wish we got sent more.
Yes.
Well, maybe I was just taking an overly long dramatic pause before I said manga.
It's like, about comics. And manga.
Yes, exactly. You can never prove that that wasn't my intention.
This okay, is true. We did interrupt him too early. We should have waited.
Anyway, we are here today with, of course, me, Ben.
Yes, and me, Rob.
And me, Andrew.
And we've got all sorts to go through today, so let's get to it. Starting off with the news that Constantine has been is getting cancelled.
And no one is surprised.
Yeah, but I can hear the wails of the fans echoing throughout the world.
Yeah, NBC have passed on season two for Constantine, but, you know.
Also, I just want to point out to like the entire world that the correct comic accurate pronunciation is Constantine.
The correct comic pronunciation is wrong.
It's not.
No, it is actually correct. I was trying to make a joke.
Right, back to Constantine.
Yeah, Constantine, however you pronounce it, NBC have passed on it. It says no to season two, although Warner Brothers is working hard to find Constantine a new home.
Yeah, so Constantine might be now being shown on Fox.
You're just not going to pronounce it correctly, are you?
No, not at all.
Yes, Fox may be the new home of Constantinople. We're not sure. It could change its name.
I was going to say it could change its name
to Istanbul. He could be called John Istanbul from now on.
So Fox is currently in the works with Lucifer comic.
Well,
show, aren't
actually,
they?
Fox makes a more logical home for it if Lucifer is going to be on Fox as well. Because there is that crossover value, because Lucifer does appear in some of the older Constantine stuff, and both of them are spin-offs of Sandman. So,
actually, no, I think Constantine is a spin-off of Swamp Thing.
Is it?
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure he visually appeared in Swamp Thing. Yes, I know he did, because I have that issue. Yeah,
I always thought that Constantine was a its own thing.
No, he started off in Swamp Thing and then he kind of spun off into his own thing.
Yeah, but I'm sure Constance Fry was in Sandman as well.
Yeah, that's what you're both doing, and I don't approve of this.
Constantly incorrect name is... He had his own thing and was in Sandman, but he was his own thing beforehand.
It's just, I don't think many people remembered him from Swamp Thing. I think most people remember him from Sandman, because he was in the very in one of the early issues of Sandman. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was in the second graphic novel for Sandman, the second trade paperback for Sandman.
Okay, yeah, maybe that's where he got really popular.
I knew him from the movie. That was my first.
Oh, you poor person.
You Keanu Reeves
fanboy.
That's
why I did not read the comic for years.
Yeah, because of Keanu Reeves. Yep. Sad Keanu.
To be fair, I do like that film for the one bit where Shia LaBeouf gets eaten by bugs.
Oh, yeah. But I just enjoy any scene with Shia LaBeouf being eaten alive by bugs.
They should put that in more film.
They
should. Not even like make new ones, just like splicing that footage from Constantine, because that film is Constantine, because he is not Constantine.
Yeah, I did like the guy who played the devil in that, though. Who played the devil in that movie.
Yeah, he was pretty... Who was he?
I can't remember. We'll Google it.
It's actually... The entire thing was cast quite well. It's just written poorly.
Yeah, the writing was awful, and I'm sorry, but for all of the comic book fans saying that, you know, if they'd chosen somebody like Robert Carlyle to play John Constantine, then I could have believed it, because he's a Scouser for a start, you know, and Carlyle can do a good Scouse accent.
Yeah, I feel like he would be like one of the best Constantines.
Yeah, the guy who they picked to play it in the TV series was actually not bad.
Yeah, Matt.
He looked the part, you know, and he sounded the part as well to a degree.
Yeah,
it's just. I think people are kind of bored of the whole supernatural thriller thing now, especially when you've got Supernatural and all the pretty boys.
That's what more I was going to say. I think Supernatural sort of stole the thunder.
Yeah, I mean, you got Supernatural and it's got all the pretty boys, you know, all those hot men that women can swoon over. Whereas the guy they picked to play John Constantine, he, you know, he's a bit ropey on a good day.
Yeah, which to be fair, he's playing a chain-smoking alcoholic.
Yeah, who's technically immortal.
So I think that Keanu Steen can do well when, if written well. So this move to Fox might help.
Yes.
So I wish it luck.
Well, I mean, if it does go to Fox, like I said, crossovers can happen, you know, between Lucifer and Constantine. So... you never know. Fox might be the logical place for it to go.
Hopefully Fox, that would be kind of a darker series.
Yep. Yes. Speaking of spin-offs, there is going to be a new spin-off from Arrow and Flash called Legends of Tomorrow, which is an unusual move because Arrow and Flash don't really have that much in the way of spin-off capability yet, do they?
No, I think they do because they've both kind of introduced...
they've introduced various characters, but I mean...
DC Universe.
They've introduced various characters, but I mean, who's going to be in this Legends of Tomorrow?
Well, no, they've got kind of the Atom from Arrow.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, he's like the best part of Arrow at the moment.
Yeah. I mean...
Deathstroke in that. He's best character in everything he's in.
Yes, Deathstroke should just be in everything. They need a Deathstroke TV series. Actually, give me my Deathstroke TV series.
I'll tell you something. The guy who they chose to play Slade Wilson... actually, I thought he was really good at it.
Yeah, he is so good.
Although it's a very different take than the comics have. Like, he's completely crazy in Arrow, but while he's quite methodical and solid in the comics.
In Arrow, he is crazy, but he's still very, very methodical.
Oh, yeah, he still holds, like I'm saying, not saying it's a bad thing. It's a great take on the character.
Yeah.
And that's why I want to see more of him.
Yeah, and the fact that he's an Aussie as well, I thought actually
he's 100% more Australian than he is in the comics.
Yeah, he is. But
I'd love them introduce Captain Boomerang in and having him the complete opposite.
Actually, they did.
Did they?
Yeah, but to us, Captain Boomerang's really disappointing.
Yeah.
So they should put them next to each other, so Captain Boomerang has to be like super Australian just to prove that he's Australian.
Get Paul Hogan. Paul Hogan, I choose you.
So he could have the beanie with corks hanging off on strings just so he's extra Australian.
No, he'll just stand there going, that's not a knife, this is a knife.
No, that's not a boomerang. No, this is a boomerang.
Yes. So yeah, Paul Hogan aside, according to a press release, when heroes alone are not enough, the world needs legends. Having seen the future, one he will desperately try to prevent from happening, time-traveling rogue Rip Hunter is tasked with assembling a disparate group of heroes and villains to confront an unstoppable threat, one in which not only is the planet at stake, but all of time itself. Can this ragtag team defeat an immortal threat unlike anything they have ever known? DC's Legends of Tomorrow stars Victor Garber, from The Flash and Alias. Brandon Routh from Arrow and Superman Returns. Arthur Darvill from Doctor Who.
I think he's going to be Rip Hunter.
Yeah, Caitlin Lotz from Arrow. Chiara Renee from Pippin. Frank Drame from Edge of Tomorrow. And Dominic Purcell from The Flash and Prison Break. And Wentworth Miller from The Flash and Prison Break. I think Wentworth and Dominic Purcell and Wentworth Miller, they're the two brothers from Prison Break, aren't they?
Yeah. And in this, they play Captain Cold and Heatwave.
Yeah.
And actually, I would love them to be in the TV series because they're just really fun characters.
Well, they're in the Flash TV series. Yeah. And they basically work as partners in the Flash TV series. I was like, hang on, am I watching Flash or am I watching Prison Break? What's going on?
So my thought on this is this a bit of a precursor to, like, Justice League? Because, we're getting all these superheroes to team up against a force greater than themselves. That sounds like Justice League.
No, I think it'd just be a completely unrelated league of people who are interested in some kind of justice-based activities.
Yes. Yes, I think so. But yeah, I think it kind of works, but it depends on what this immortal threat is to the planet Earth. I know it's not going to be Galactus, because, you know... a squirrel girl fed him recently.
And it's the wrong comic series.
Yeah.
If he wants to go to a different comic book series, he'll go to a different comic series.
Well, this is the thing. Apparently in one of the... I don't know if they've retconned this or not, but it used to be the case that Galactus was actually a remnant from... he was actually the only being left from a different universe. He didn't actually belong in this universe. He'd basically come to this universe from a different universe.
Yeah, he was like the only thing to survive the death of the universe that came before our universe.
Yes.
Oh, so that could be the DC universe.
True. So knowing it being DC, it would probably be the... is it Apocalyptons or something like that?
Darkseid, I don't know. I feel like they probably can't use Darkseid because I think they'll want him for films.
Oh, true.
Oh, wow.
But then again, this is unconnected to the movies.
Yeah,
so.
But yes, they can't use it. It's like because they killed off Deadshot in Arrow because he's going to be in the Suicide Squad movie.
Oh.
So DC were like, no, we want him in films. You can't have him anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, what dicks.
No, I bet it's going to be Starro, like the giant evil space starfish.
Yeah, then again, they could go with Eclipso.
Oh, yeah, they could go with that's a more serious one.
Thing is, that would be an interesting one to use, Eclipso, because Eclipso was basically, he basically turned characters evil.
Yeah.
That was his ability. That was his power. He basically turned everybody evil. It was weird because it was all about the crystals and stuff like that, and they had to destroy the crystal to cut his hold over those people, if I remember rightly.
I want them to do Dr. Light.
Dr. Light, I think, yeah, true. Yeah, the Dr. Light. Sorry, when people say Dr. Light, I just remember the end of the Teen Titans.
Yeah, that's cartoon. Exactly what I was thinking of. I was thinking of the scene when Raven just destroys him, just like...
Yeah, I just thinking of the scene at the end after, you know, at the end of Titans Together.
Yeah.
When there's like, oh, it's the Dr. Light, and then he's like, he's going to flip when he sees this.
He's basically the only bad guy not invited to, like, the League of...
Yeah.
Evil, or whatever it was called.
The League of Evil, and...
So every superhero in the world was basically there in... What was the sequel? Wasn't it just Go City or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
So they were just like, all of them there, and then it's just Dr. Light, like, yeah.
He's like, I surrender. Please don't, and not this.
He was just like the one smart thing he's ever done.
Yeah. Okay, right, moving on. Sticking with kind of superhero movies, production has begun on Marvel's Captain America Civil War. And you had some information about the premise of this, didn't you?
Yes, there's actually an official synopsis out now. So Captain America Civil War picks up where Avengers Age of Ultron left off, as Steve Rogers leads a new team of Avengers in their continued efforts to safeguard humanity. But after another international incident involving the Avengers results in collateral damage, political pressure mounts to install a system of accountability and a governing body to determine when to enlist the services of the team. New status quo factions the Avengers while they try to protect the world from a new nefarious villain. So it sounds like quite a loose adaptation of Civil War.
So, let me ask you, was all the stuff that happened in the last Avengers or the first Avengers not collateral damage enough?
It's going to have to be some pretty collateral damage.
It's like, don't they tear down like entire skyscrapers in the last movie? Like,
well, no, in the last movie, literally an entire city got destroyed.
Yeah, and that's like a Middle Eastern country. It doesn't matter.
So I really hope it's just something really bad, like a cat gets hit by a bus or something. Like, no, we've gone too far.
He hurt the kitty. Can't let them hurt the kitty.
Maybe Captain America accidentally, like, literally just kicks a puppy in the face by accident.
Just the shield deflects into one, like...
What, slices it in half?
Yes.
Just like, fix that. We've gone too far.
So, it seems like a basic adaptation of what happened in the comics.
Yeah, Civil War was a massive event for Marvel as well.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I think this might turn out to be the weakest of the Captain America films.
Tell the truth, the first one was pretty damn weak.
Yeah, but he did punch Hitler in the face 200 times, so it had that saving grace.
It was a fun film, the first one.
It was fun, but you could tell it was just there, so they had Captain America in the Avengers. That was the only reason it existed.
Yeah.
Number two was better, but like so far, he's just been there because...
Yeah.
So this was like the first one I had like real hopes for, because I'm like, oh, they're doing Civil War. But it seems the scope seems a lot smaller than before.
They've toned it down quite a lot.
Because the idea of Civil War was it wasn't just the Avengers, it was every superpowered person in the world.
See,
but because they don't have access to the X-Men or Fantastic Four or all these other things, all they can do is Avengers and now Spider-Man because they got permission for it.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it is still written and directed by the same... the Russo brothers who did the last Captain America, so it still definitely has a chance of being good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've got no doubt it won't be good, but it's just... it's a shame that they had to lower their scope because of...
Licensing issues. Yeah. That is a shame, but, you know, what can you do?
Yeah, plus it's still...
I can complain on the internet!
Yes, which is
that
what
will change
right
something. Yep.
Just remember, if you rant loudly, they'll definitely hear your opinions. Maybe send them some nice strongly worded letters in all caps. Let those always get through.
Matt, there's other pressing issues on the internet at the moment. Like, there's a huge petition going around for the north of England to leave England and join Scotland.
I've already signed that.
Yep, so have I.
I thought everybody... I think everybody in this room's already signed it.
It seems the safest bet at the moment.
Yeah.
But I'm half southern. What would like I'd be split in half and like part of my body placed in England and the top half in Scotland?
No. You can just live directly on the border.
Yeah, you just have to make sure you stick along that exact line for the rest of your life.
Basically, you can only walk along this line and that's it.
If you go one side or the other, you're a traitor and you must die.
You know, this is all going to culminate when like... I realise my DS charger is on one side of the board. It's like, no.
Just can't reach it. No.
People
someone get me a cord hanger.
People are just going to spend their life placing things just out of reach. Fun times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Civil War.
Yes.
That's England's Civil War at the moment.
Yeah, I thought English Civil War has got very genteel over the years, hasn't it? There's no more kind of kicking people with swords or, you know, shooting them with muskets. It's all gone to, you know, pushing in front of each other in the queue.
But yeah, that's how we need to, like, resolve this referendum.
Yeah. You know, having a referendum, yeah.
Wait, next?
Yes, anyway, moving on.
Because there was just... couple more things I want to say about Captain America. William Hurt is going to be coming back as General Ross.
Really? Thunderbolt Ross?
Yeah. Which I'm surprised, because I thought they tend to try and distance themselves from that Hulk movie.
Well, no, didn't he play General Ross in both the Hulk movies?
No, I think it was only the most recent one.
So it was the Edward Norton one?
Yeah.
Oh, the good one, I should say. Oh, the only one, I should say.
The all right one.
Yeah, the all right one. The better than the better.
That's the comparatively
other one.
Amazing.
The
one.
Lesser of two evils one.
It wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that great either.
Nah. I mean, whoever the guy they got to play, Emil Blonsky.
Yeah.
Just didn't work for me.
No.
He's not meant to be a combat veteran. He's meant to be a thug. That was the Abomination, wasn't it?
He wasn't meant to be Russian.
Yeah. I didn't get how he suddenly turned into very, very English.
It worked better with focus testing. That tends to be the reason for any change.
Yeah. I see what you mean, but, you know, I just spent... Before I watched that movie, because I didn't watch it when it came out, I was watching Lie to Me.
Yes, right.
So when I went to watch, you know, The Incredible Hulk, I saw him in The Incredible Hulk. I was going, hang on, he's a human lie detector. He's not like this super strong guy. He's not a combat veteran. Why isn't he detecting lies? He could tell this person's lying and this person's lying. He's a human lie detector. That's his superpower. just didn't quite work in my head.
Was it being a human lie detector doesn't overly help against punches to the face?
Yes.
I can tell you're lying about the fact that you won't punch me.
Yes,
now,
quite.
You stay there, Tim, or this is going to hurt. You're lying. No, no, he's not.
This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. The classic one. Right, okay, moving on. Bookstores in Japan are going around telling people that Hunter x Hunter has finally finished because they are sick to death of all of the hiatuses that have happened.
Yes. Like, a lot of large book chains in around Japan have just gone and said, hey, this is finished now, we're sick of waiting, so we're just going to sell it as a bulk finished product.
Yeah. They basically just said, okay, we're done. They're selling the 32 volumes as a complete set for $7,000 to $7,500 yen, or $59 to $63, which is actually quite cheap for 32 volumes.
Yeah, that's about 30 quid, isn't it?
Yeah. 30 quid for 32 volumes. It's a pound a volume.
Yeah.
I'd buy it.
Yeah, that's a very good deal.
But reaction among Japanese fans is mostly resigned, with comments like it's finished, and I think it's better if it ended there. While others protest the labeling with, hey, don't finish it, you know, and don't give up.
But to tell you the truth, it has been a year since the last volume was released.
Yeah.
Over a year, even. March last one that was released?
August. August last year. So it hasn't quite been a year, but it's coming on there.
I understand why the individual issues aren't coming out, because the health issues with the writer.
Thing is,
but the volumes can still come out.
Apparently he knows how he wants to progress with the story, and he knows how it's going to end. So there is an option available to him. He doesn't have to do all the work himself.
Right? Yeah.
If he's been working with the same team for a while, they will know his art style. Right? So all he would need to do is basically plan out the story.
Yeah.
Which would save him a lot more time and be less stress on him. But I don't know how serious his condition is. This is the thing.
So here's something that's really sad, is if his condition worsens and he can't finish it, it'd be a shame if it never gets finished.
Yeah. I mean, I have heard that he has like complete notes and everything like that for finishing the story, for taking it further and finishing it off, but like many mangaka, he's very, very proud of what he does.
So it's kind of a, this is my story, I want to be the one who tells
I will draw these panels the way that I envision them, that sort of thing. And he's an artist in the truest sense of the word. No artist would basically do a sketch and then let some other artist finish it off, would they?
That happens all the time.
What, just doing a rough sketch of something?
Yeah, that happens a lot in comics and manga, that someone basically draws out the roughs.
Yeah.
And then sends it to, like, sometimes to different companies to finish it off.
Okay.
Because it can be too much for just one person to do.
Normally in the manga industry, they have their own team of people working with them.
Yeah.
Rather than sending them off to other companies, they basically do the main outline and then just get someone to ink it.
Yeah.
But they've actually done all of it themselves, one guy is writing and somebody else is the artist. But if you're an artist author like the mangaka for Hunter x Hunter, then yeah.
From what I understand, it seems like comics are more kind of tightly controlled. So that the companies behind them can go, no, this needs to come out on this date. So if you can't finish this art, we'll get someone else who can.
Yeah, they are more tightly controlled in Western comics, you know, and they have this bank of talent that they can rely on. And the thing is, it's different because in Western comics, we're used to artists changing at the drop of a hat. You know, we're used to new writers coming on board and old writers leaving. It's something that we expect to happen. So, but it's not something that happens really in the manga industry. You know, if a mangaka starts a series, then they will probably finish that series themselves.
Okay, so it's usually just like one writer, one artist.
One writer, one artist, or one writer, artist, all the way through.
is that they do tend to have a team to help them do that.
They will have a team to help them do that. They wouldn't be able to do it all themselves. It'd be impossible.
Yeah. They just sort of do the... depends on the people, but some people just do the rough. Some people do the basic line. Some people...
Yeah. I think that one of the... Some people do background stuff like that. I think the main issue here... See, there the other alternative is basically turn it into a monthly manga. You know, add on a couple of extra pages and turn it into a monthly manga, which again would be less stress on him. If he's got the story already mapped out, then all he needs to do is do the outlines for the panel work, and then let somebody else ink it, and you know, fix the background, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if it was a monthly one, because it was kind of a weekly thing, you know, weekly, bi-weekly, which I think was too much.
Oh yeah, well that's a lot of stress on anyone.
Yeah. Even if you have a good team helping you, you know, it's a lot of stress. It does explain why Bleach is a bit naff, though.
I've heard that Bleach has lots of filler.
No, that's Naruto.
Bleach has plenty of filler as well.
Bleach does have plenty of filler, but Naruto has way more.
Oh, yeah, Naruto's worse, but still.
Yeah, Naruto is kind of the king of filler, when you get right down to it.
His thing I find about... Naruto filler, there is more, but it is better quality, while Bleach is very pointless, but there's less of it. So it's choosing your poison.
Well, surely the filler in Bleach is a lot cleaner.
Boo! Boo! Boo!
Yeah, just for all the listeners, you didn't see the murderous look that Ben just threw at Andy.
I am very afraid for what's going to happen once the show is finished.
I was actually afraid Ben was going to launch himself at you there.
So I'm more disappointed in myself for not thinking of that pun.
Okay, all right. Final story before we get into some comics and manga and stuff like that. Hayao Miyazaki and Isao Takahata, in 1971, they went to Sweden to speak to Astrid Lindgren about her getting the rights to her work, Pippi Longstocking. They wanted to do an anime adaptation of it, and they'd basically done a bunch of sketches and some art, you know, test artwork, stuff like that, to show her. She gave them a resounding no. So yeah, that project was scuppered. So until 2009, everyone thought, okay, it's gone. No one, nothing's going to happen about it. But in 2009, the old artwork that they did got posted on LiveJournal, and it received a lot of attention from Ghibli fans. So they collected everything, and they're releasing all of that old artwork for Pippi Longstocking in a new book, a new art book called Illusions of Pippi Longstocking. And some of the artwork is actually really quite cute.
Oh yeah, it's adorable.
Yeah, it's very cute. It's very Ghibli. And any fan who looks at this will be, of either works, be overjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, it does have Ghibli's style through and through. Yeah, it is Ghibli's style through and through, but yeah.
Just makes it see what a shame it is that film never happened.
Well, there's always room to hope that, you know, and I'm sure that with the success of stories like Arrietty and Ponyo and, you know.
Yeah, and similar stuff.
Yes.
You can see this sort of thing being successful, and maybe there might be a change of minds after this.
Yeah.
I mean, do we know why she originally said no?
I think she just didn't like the idea of it being done by done in an animated movie by some weird Japanese men.
Yeah, because I guess by that point they weren't as established as they are now.
No. I'm pretty sure if Ghibli went back to Sweden and spoke to... I don't know if Astrid Lindgren's still alive, but... If they speak to whoever, if she has sadly passed on, if they speak to whoever is maintaining her estate, I'm sure they'd jump at the chance now.
I'm not sure, because people who... You get the two sort of people when they inherit an estate. Those who want to preserve the thoughts of the person and the one who wants to sell it all and get the money. If it's the prior, they'll probably go, no, she rejected you before, I will reject you again now.
Yeah, it's just...
I don't think it's really that fair to put them in the two camps, because there could be people saying, oh yeah, I can see you would actually do a really good job with this. Yeah, I know she said no originally, but I think she was wrong to say that.
Well, there is that, but I mean, I think they'd be a bit more pragmatic about things, as you say, Andrew. And I think they'd look at the body of work that Ghibli have in terms of West adaptations of Western titles. Okay, Tales of Earthsea wasn't the best, but it was actually...
still good.
It was actually still quite good. You know, loads of people slated it, saying, oh, it's not typical Ghibli, but it wasn't meant to be typical Ghibli. And all those stories about, you know, Miyazaki and his son Goro falling out with each other over it were... turns out that Miyazaki actually helped his son making that film. So, yeah, have that all you know, people who tried to stir trouble.
Yeah, we've told them.
Yes.
That's the end of all internet rumour making now. We've said that.
Yes, have that. Anyway, yeah. Arrietty, though. Arrietty was great.
Yeah, so good.
You know, and Arrietty came from The Borrowers. Ponyo came from The Little Mermaid. You know, so they've got a good pedigree.
Well, yeah. Very disappointed, by the way, that Ponyo didn't dissolve into a pile of salt at the end.
True. But then again, it is a kids' movie.
So kids need to learn this kind of thing. It's an important life lesson.
Are you saying that all children should be forced to watch Watership Down and Plague Dogs?
Yes. Sometimes the things you love die horribly.
You're evil.
We were talking about this on Keyframe. Yes. Kids can handle trauma.
Kids can handle trauma.
So let's traumatize them.
Yeah, but by trauma, I mean stuff like The Dark Crystal, and, you know, maybe Labyrinth and, you know, stuff like that. Never Ending Story with Artax. But, you know, not Watership Down.
Saw.
I'm just saying, if we like, teach children at a young age just to, like, be completely emotionally broken, they'll never be affected by anything ever again.
Have you noticed the line is actually, for me, is actually Watership Down? You know, I'm happy with them seeing a horse, you know, a horse sinking into the mud in Neverending Story.
Yeah, because it's too sad to get.
And with Atreyu being attacked by Gamork, you know, I'm happy with a baby being kidnapped in Labyrinth. I'm happy with, you know, the Skeksis committing genocide. But when it comes to rabbits killing each other, no, I draw the line there.
You heard it here first. Rob is for baby kidnapping and genocide. As long as rabbits aren't involved.
Or dogs.
Or dogs. Yep.
So if Watership Down was about hamsters, would that be, like, completely fine?
Oh, yeah, that'd be fine. Everyone knows...
You monster.
Everyone knows hamsters are amongst the most evil small furry animals ever.
Bet you know about that.
Yes, I've heard stories.
That didn't make it sound better.
We did used to have a hamster at home, and, like, she would just periodically escape, but then just, like, sit on top of, like, her little hutch thing and just go, yeah, I can escape. What you gonna do about it?
I can escape whenever I want. I just don't wanna.
Or is this a gangster hamster?
Oh, yeah, she was the most gangster. Just, like, in the ball, you know, they see me rolling, they hating.
Did she have one of those, you know, the little hamster balls, or the, you know, did she have one of those that bounced every so often?
They see me rolling, they're hating. Sorry, you just led me into that through.
Yeah, I know. Right, shall we take a break there?
Sure.
We'll be back with some comics.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films, and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well-staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week, and do it reasonably well.
Hello and welcome back to 4Panel, the Geek Show, all about comics and manga. We are now on our review section, where we're going to be talking about all the comics we've been reading this week.
And I'm going to go first, because I has comics to review.
Yes.
Okay, so first up, I've got Marvel's Secret Wars issue 1, which is their big event that's going on at the moment. And this is actually a proper, like, full-on epic event comic. Because I think a lot of Marvel's events recently, they've been quite lackluster.
Yeah, we were saying, like, the last big one was just... was probably the Spider-Verse, and that was a single...
Yeah, that was just Spider-Man. That was, like, the last good one. But, like, certainly the big company-wide ones have just been kind of meh. I think that's because like they haven't really had that much build up or consequence afterwards. Whereas this one, like Jonathan Hickman's been writing his Avengers series, which is been going on for, I think it's at least a year now, just building up to this point. So what's going on now is alternate universe versions of Earth have been colliding with each other. So now kind of Marvel's main continuity and their Ultimate Comics, those two Earths are about to like collide with each other. So this issue kind of deals with the two universes going to war over it. So like, literally like Ultimate Iron Man just like comes through a portal with like helicarriers and like gunships and stuff, and just all the superheroes come up and fight him. And it's just, it's like massive amounts of chaos and just all these really awesome moments, like the Hulk, She-Hulk and Colossus just go to the Ultimate Universe and just knock down the Triskelion.
Nice.
And I think like literally the best moment is basically the Kingpin. There was an end of the world party. It's like all the supervillains just sitting there in a bar, and just like the Punisher strolls in and goes, "So gentlemen, they say when you go, you can't take it all with you," which begs the question, what am I going to do with all these bullets? And it's just the best, most awesome moment. It's literally two panels, and it just, it completely steals the whole thing. So cool. Yeah, Secret Wars is definitely off to a very good start.
Yeah, that's good, because were you that impressed in the like Volume Zero that they put out on Free Comic Book Day?
No, but to be fair, that seemed to mostly just sum things up.
Yeah, it was a bit of a nothing thing, and it sort of rubbed people a bit in the wrong way. So it's good to know that they're getting off to a good start now.
Yeah.
I think what else is interesting is just like the variety of characters involved. Because I know now Marvel tend to not like to use the Fantastic Four and the X-Men so much because obviously of the movie rights.
Yeah.
But yeah. Reed Richards is pretty much like the main character in this. I think probably just because Jonathan Hickman is such a massive Reed Richards fan. But like, because yeah. I think the main characters are basically like a team have gone off in kind of like a multiversal life raft type thing to basically survive the end of the universe.
So, but I mean, when you get right down to it, anytime any kind of anomaly or anything like that happens in the Marvel Universe, it is a case of who you're going to call.
Yeah.
It's Reed Richards.
But yeah, it's like, it's him, it's Black Panther, you've got the new Thor, Captain Marvel, because I think they're the two main female characters that Marvel are trying to push now.
Yeah.
You've got Spider-Man, because he's Spider-Man. You've got and that's another thing, Cyclops has basically become the Phoenix again.
What?
Because they need to do something to make Cyclops interesting.
Cyclops is Phoenix. How did this happen?
A while ago they did Avengers versus X-Men, which was like another big event. But basically Cyclops got possessed by the power of the Phoenix and went kind of crazy. But in this he's like, right, universe is ending, I'm going to go become a god again. And just starts blowing everything up.
Okay.
Yay.
Sorry, it's just very, very Russian. Anyway, moving on.
Okay, next up, I'm going to be talking about The Power of Tank Girl. This is actually a collection of three different Tank Girl graphic novels, The Gifting, The Vision of Bogart, and The Royal Escape, The Power of the Tank Girl. And so it's back to like the classic art style, classic artist, classic humor, classic. It still holds up to these days. And if you don't know about Tank Girl, it's basically a post-apocalyptic world about her, and it's the story of a girl called Tank Girl, who's a girl with a tank, and she's basically fighting off the armies and
I think I get where her name comes from.
Yeah, it's because of her origin of tank origin. Yeah. From Tanksville.
Can you guess where her best friend Jet Girl got her name from?
Is it because of her jet black hair?
No, she's a fan of Jet the dog from Mega Man.
Oh. No, she's a fan of Jet from Gladiators.
So, anyway, it's basically the tale of her going on her random adventures and having fun. And they're always random and crazy. It's like the first story in this. They're basically fighting in the city. Jet Girl needs to take out a sniper, but she finds she hasn't got a gun, so she throws her golden egg at them. And then when she's shot, she goes into a non-responsive state until they can hunt down the egg and find it again. but when it hatches, it's a tiny jet girl inside who then takes control of a giant terracotta army. This is Tank Girl, ladies and gentlemen.
Those are all words that you just said.
Yes, exactly. They are all words, and I think I remember this Tank Girl story.
It is amazing. It is crazy. It does not hold back. I mean, I'm going to have to censor this, but the first word in this book is f***ing. Like, so... like, yeah, it doesn't hold back at all. It's full of blood and violence and swearing, and... it's a lot of fun, and it's one of the most beautiful books ever created. Same guy who did the art for Gorillaz, and it shines through.
Oh, the band Gorillaz.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it just is utterly beautiful. So, like, I can't recommend it enough. It is funny and well-written and amusing as all hell. So, yeah. Tank Girl.
She's a girl who has a tank.
Yep.
Yes. Okay, do you want to do another one then?
Yeah, I can happily do another one. Shall I do another Marvel one?
Go on.
Okay, so this one is Spider-Woman issue 7. So basically, Spider-Woman has her own series now. Actually, inadvertent link, it started off as a tie-in to Spider-Verse.
Yep.
But since then, it's kind of gone off in its own kind of slightly odd direction. Basically... it's Spider-Woman decided she's had enough of, like, crazy alternate reality-type adventures, and she just wants to be, like, a normal-ish private detective. You know, obviously, normal-ish is kind of relative when you have superpowers.
It seems like a lot of Marvel characters are going off to be private investigators nowadays.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the proper thing. But I think Spider-Woman has precedent, because I think she used to be sort of a private detective a while ago. Like, in between doing crazy spy stuff and whatnot.
Yeah.
But yeah, this has just been... it's a really fun book. It's kind of... have you ever seen the series Veronica Mars?
Yeah.
It's a lot like that, I think.
Oh, cool.
And it's just... also, the art is really lovely. It's by Javier Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah.
I was just saying today, I realised the art for the Hobgoblin miniseries, which is, like, the only good bit of Axis.
Yes, probably. There was a couple of moments, but mostly Hobgoblin.
Yeah, it was all about Hobgoblin.
Okay.
But yeah, that's about it for Spider-Woman. It's a fun, nice book to read.
So, fantastic. Yes. So, should I do Gundam?
Sure.
Origins. So, Gundam the Origin, book 6. To War. Now, this one's a little different from the other Gundam Origin ones. This one primarily deals with, for a good portion of this book, or this manga adaptation of the Gundam series, it deals with Char Aznable. Now, Char is probably the single most iconic character in the entire Gundam franchise. Him and his big red Zaku, which I know sounds like a euphemism. Yes, I know. I know all the jokes about Char's big red Zaku, so we're not going to go into them here. But this is a story about how Char was before he took the name Char Aznable, because that's not his real name. He was originally from an aristocratic family who were betrayed and then hunted down, and in order to get revenge, he took on his best friend's name and joined a military academy. And worked his way up through the ranks just for revenge. Char's goal in Gundam has always been about his own personal vendetta. It's never been about the glory of the Empire or anything like that.
Yeah, so he sounds like he's very focused on just the one thing.
Yes, he is. As far as he's concerned, the Empire can go to hell. He might be a cog in the military machine, but Char has always been... It's a bit strange because, and it does go into a lot more detail in this manga volume about Char's character than it did in the anime series, which is unusual. But Gundam is one of those...
which anime series is that? Because I know there's been like...
Gundam, the original Gundam.
Right. I've only seen Wing.
Yeah, most people have only seen Wing, and Wing is kind of tame by comparison. The reason why Gundam is so beloved by so many anime fans is because it pushed what anime was doing at the time. it kind of, you know, anime has always been one of these areas where it's, I mean, the whole cartoons are for kids is still a very strong opinion, not just here, but over in Japan as well. And Gundam was one of the reasons why that opinion started to change. Aside from having very, very complex characters and a surprisingly deep plot, you know, the actual setting of it being a war between worlds, a war between empires, but all of them are human, you know, and the fact that characters, you know, actually died in it as well. Not just characters, but characters who, you know, you actually had an interest in. The fact that they lost, they died, you know, they didn't succeed. The hero didn't win all his battles. The hero suffered, you know, half the time. And the hero lost quite a lot. You know, and when he did win, it was kind of a fluke that he won. The fact that it had all of those things and it just had people just trying to fumble along as best they could made it into what it is now. It's this massive franchise that sells everything from video games to, you know, to toys, to model kits, to all sorts. I think they're doing a fantastic job with these manga volumes. It's unusual because Yoshikazu Yasuhiko, he had a key role in the original series. He used to do character designs and illustrations and stuff like that for the original series. He's also worked on several other anime series, and you can tell his work is really identifiable. Having him as the main artist for this really brings home that this is Gundam.
Yeah.
You know, through and through. It's not all in color. You know, most of it is in black and white with some key color pages, but it is a tome. This, along with the first five manga in this series, you know, if you drop them on someone's head, you'd probably kill them. Because this is a heavy, heavy book. But it is very, very interesting, and it will grip you, especially
please,
this volume.
Please don't give him ideas about how to kill me.
Nah, this volume.
I've got my own ideas.
Don't worry, he won't be using Char to kill you. He'll probably go with the 75 years of comic book covers, of Marvel comic covers, which is on the shelf over there.
That's how I've always wanted to go.
But yeah, Gundam, The Origin, Volume 6, is available now. It's something for every Gundam fan to own. If you're a fan of Gundam, this is a series that you really shouldn't be without, because you cannot call yourself a fan of Gundam unless you've got this on your shelf.
Is it a good way for new fans to get into it?
Oh, God, yeah. It's a lot more accessible for new fans because it's in comic book form, so you can pick it up and put it down. You don't need to sit through 20 minutes of an episode just to catch up with a particular story. You just basically take it off your shelf, read it a bit, put it back on your shelf.
Yep.
Yeah. And it is, you know, it's the core story, it's the main story, it's the original Gundam story. And it's really well told in this.
Cool.
Anyway, moving on.
Yep.
I believe Ben has...
Yes, to the begrudgence of everyone else in the room, I'm going to be talking about ponies for a bit.
Yeah, it's pony time.
Not just any ponies.
Yes, this is My Little Pony, Fiendship is Magic. This was a 5-week series that happened recently, where they did 5 one-off comics all about villains within the My Little Pony universe.
Yeah.
And they started off with Sombra, who was probably one of the weakest bad guys in the whole show. He was introduced in the Crystal Empire because basically they needed a bad guy for an episode.
Oh, this is the zombie zebra.
He's not a zombie zebra.
Yes, he is a zombie zebra. In my mind, he's a zombie zebra. No one can take that from me.
As I said, Sombra didn't really have any real characteristics in the show. He said 2 words through the whole thing, and that was Sombra and crystals. So, not much of a talker. So this actually explains a lot of why he doesn't say much and how he became the big evil King Sombra. It basically tells the story of how he was found just outside the Crystal Empire, just as a foal who didn't know anything. He couldn't talk, all he could say was Sombra, and they basically take him in and they teach him how to talk and how to everything works and stuff. But as a kid who can't really talk properly, he didn't have many friends, and until he met a girl called Radiant Hope, who became who was a bit of a strange girl, very imaginative, and everyone else thought she was weird, so everyone left her alone. And they became friends, and they were all happy and stuff. And she would tell him about the Crystal Festival that happens every year. And they got really excited for it. They were saving so they could do all the stuff at the festival. And then when it came round, Sombra got deathly ill. He couldn't move his legs. He was in hot sweats. He was basically, everyone thought he was dying. But then the second the festival finished, he got better. And this kept happening over the years until eventually, like, people started growing up and Radiant Hope found out her special gift was in medical magic, so she could heal ponies, and to the state that she was invited to the school for gifted unicorns run by Celestia, the queen of the world. And
not run by Professor Xavier.
No, unfortunately. That would be a completely different comic series, and I would like to read it.
Yeah, it would be hilarious. Celestia, bald, and in a floating hover chair.
Well, so he's like a hover paddock.
Yeah. You can eat the floor while you're waiting.
When he finds this out, he reacts badly because his only friend in the world is leaving him. So he runs out. He runs into a waste outside the Crystal Empire, where he finds a talking crystal that informs him about who he actually is, that he's one of these dark ones who existed, that was there to destroy the Crystal Empire. It grants him the powers that he hasn't had before, and he basically goes back and he's like, I can take revenge on this city for being mean to me. He finds out that the queen that there knew about who he was and withheld the information, and he kills her. Well, actually, it's not clear that he turns her to stone or crystal and shatters her and spreads the pieces across the whole of Equestria. Like,
it makes her sound kind of dead.
Yeah, exactly. And so he sees how his friend reacts and she runs off, and he basically gets rid of the entire city out of spite for her leaving him. And it sort of, it adds depth to a character that didn't have any.
When you say gets rid of, is there pony genocide in this comic?
The entire city disappears off the face of the earth and no one knows what happens to it.
Sounds like pony genocide.
Now, it's not genocide because in the Crystal Empire episodes, the city reappears.
Oh.
But they do find out the entire... genocide. But the entire city was enslaved and forced to do his bidding. So that's kind of bad.
Oh, good. So it's just pony slavery instead.
Yeah. So he was a character that didn't have any character. And this sort of explains the way he is. And it was very interesting because, like I said, he was nothing. And now he's one of my favorite characters. So does a good job. It's one of the reasons I like the comic. It adds stuff where there wasn't anything.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Good. Next up.
Okay, cool. I am going to top out a thing that wasn't by Marvel now.
Woo!
I know, it's surprising. So this is Chrononauts by Mark Miller and Sean Gordon Murphy. So it's by Image Comics. So this is kind of Mark Miller's new series. I think it's just a four-issue miniseries. It's basically about two people basically invent time travel. It's kind of, it's an interesting sort of a bit of a different time travel, in that they instead have kind of like these suits that allow them to travel back in time. And basically, it's basically like a Stargate that lets them travel back in time. Instead of like an actual physical machine.
Yeah.
Which I think it's just a bit different. So this issue just mostly sets up kind of how they came to find it. And like, there's a great image on, I think, about the second page of basically discovering like there are temporal anomalies throughout the world. Just like they find a fighter jet inside of a pyramid, which I think is, it's a pretty interesting way to start the series off.
Cool.
So yeah, this is kind of just mostly about like the years they spent developing the technology that would eventually allow them to travel back in time. It's kind of, it's fun. It's got like a fun mix of kind of comedy and drama.
Cool. And what's this called? Chrononauts.
Yeah, Chrononauts.
Oh, right.
So is it one you're going to stick with? You're planning on getting the next few issues?
If the rest of the issues ever come out, because apparently issue 2 is out in America and has been for like 3 weeks.
Ooh.
But I have not been able to find it anywhere in this country.
It's that old America UK time lag again.
It is.
Fun.
Yes.
Which I think it's appropriate that Chrononauts is suffering from time lag.
Yes, okay. Shall we move on?
Sure. I'm now going to be talking about issue 2 of Fiendship.
Might want to do all of them together.
Okay.
We've got about, we're on like 57 minutes. Okay. So
I'm just going to bulk through the rest of these then. Next up, we've got T-Rex, who was the villain from the final of the previous series. He's basically a guy who went around absorbing ponies' magic, taking away all power they have, and then using it to blow stuff up. He's the only Dragon Ball-esque episode in the My Little Pony scene.
So did he spend the entire episode charging up his power?
Yeah, basically. And then at the end, they had a giant death laser battle.
Oh, no, no, no. You can't have the giant death laser battle until, like, several episodes later once they've finished charging.
Oh, well, they only did, like, 1.5 episodes of charging.
But that's still not Dragon Ball Z at all.
So this basically shows him as a child, basically as the prince of his domain, interacting with a, like, elder sorcerer sort of person who's captured a unicorn and explains him about absorbing the power. Says, you can't do this. This is way too complex for you to do. But this is what you can do with the power of a unicorn. And it is messed up. I can do death lasers now.
And my hair goes all gold and spiky.
He sort of ventures into like his relationship with his parents. He's got a loving mother, but a very strict father who basically doesn't trust him with the power he has. And the relationship with Scorpion, his brother, that was actually a character from the original My Little Pony movie.
Wait, did you say Scorpion?
Scorpion.
Oh.
It's not quite that cool. Get over here. No, so he establishes why he is the character he is. He's very self-centered. He's all about power because he's not held to any respect by his own parents. And so he looks outside to try and find, like, his own power. And in this, he tries to absorb the power of the unicorn, but he's not strong enough. And it becomes a huge deal where his parents are now like, oh, God damn it, we've now got a unicorn who's been imprisoned by one of our people. Equestria's gonna be pissed. And as they would, you just kidnap their people.
Yeah.
And so it sort of sows the seeds to why he does what he did in the show.
All right, cool.
Did you say that one's worthwhile?
It's pretty good. It's not as good as... it's not the best one, but it's still a good one. But next up is issue 3 about the Sirens. And this is probably the weakest of all of them.
Okay, should we be quick about this one? Because I can't handle musical ponies again.
Basically, this is about musical ponies.
They can't play with the hooves.
They're seahorses.
Yeah, basically...
Because seahorses don't even have hands.
They're not in...
They have hooves for hands, like Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah. They're seahorses. Not in the sea, though. They're just about in the world.
Yeah.
So basically, sirens, what they do is... They can use music to cause hostility, and then they can feed off that hostility. And this basically shows the sirens, they've been basically using their songs, they've been feeding off, and they're now in Canterlot, that's like the big fancy city. And suddenly their music isn't working because of the sophistication of the ponies in Canterlot. So they have to redesign the way that their music works. And in doing so, creates pop music. They start feeding off the disharmony that happens, but Starswell the Bearded, a very powerful unicorn that's basically the get-out clause for all the stuff in the My Little Pony. Like, something magical happened, it was Starswell. He notices what's happened and starts trying to counter it with his own music. And they basically go through a billion different musical battles, creating basically every musical genre that currently exists. In the end, the sirens overpower him, So he goes, screw it. I'm going to send them to another dimension. That's just what I'm going to do.
And sounds kind of like a sore loser.
Yeah, but tell the truth, destruction of your land or sending them to
another...
The place
is called Canterlot. It deserves to be destroyed.
It sounds more like epic rap battles of history.
I would like to see that, actually. It is basically what happens is they have an epic rap battle, but it's not just rap, it is everything. So, like I said, it's probably the weakest out of the lot. It's not bad, but it's just it doesn't add anything to the characters at all. It explains how they ended up in the Equestria Girls world, but it's just it's not that great. Next up, I have got Nightmare Moon story. Now, Nightmare Moon was the bad guy from the first episodes of the show. And this is when she had just been imprisoned on the moon. And the fan base has done a lot of interesting stuff with this, like working with the isolation of it. But the comic sort of wrote itself into a corner because they've had a previous arc about Nightmare Rarity where they went to the moon and they found like creatures there that were the remnants of Nightmare Moon. Really good story, but this is sort of her before these creatures become a remnant of it. And it's basically her manipulating them, learning how to manipulate dreams and nightmares and all of that sort of jazz. And you see her basically, I can't take out my sister now that I'm in the moon, but I can terrorize the people with nightmares. I can terrorize her with nightmares. And I can change these creatures into my own minions. It's not bad. It's just, it
sounds like it's just kind of filling a gap, really.
Yeah, like I said, the interesting thing about Nightmare Moon on the moon was her dealing with isolation. The idea of she's trapped on the moon for 1,000 years alone, but by adding extra creatures...
Yeah, it kind of takes away the going crazy from isolation angle.
Exactly. I like how it fills in the fact that she has the ability to go into dreams. She couldn't do this before she was at the moon, but she could do it afterwards. And this sort of explains why she can do this. But it's still, I would have much preferred to see a thing about her dealing with isolation. But like I said, they've sort of knocked that back with... I don't blame them because Nightmare Rarity was a great arc, but still. And finally, my second favourite out of all these, The Chrysalis. Chrysalis was from the Canterlot Wedding episodes. She's a changeling that basically a race that can change into any form. And after the event
of God, the fan fiction potential.
After the event of the wedding, they did an arc about Chrysalis trying to get her revenge again. And this is carry on from there, where she's now been imprisoned for what she did. Apparently very up for 1,000-year sentences in Equestria. It seems like the baseline for whatever anyone evil does.
Well, it depends on how long 1,000 years is. I mean, it could be like 1 year to them is like, you know, 3 hours to us.
Well, it's just been worked out that over, like, I think it's 4 seasons, they've just got round to their second winter. So apparently a year lasts a long time.
Right. So... pony judicial system is messed up.
A little bit, yes.
Well, I think I know who the real bad guys are.
Yeah, but hang on. Somebody actually worked this out?
Of course somebody worked this out.
Well, he's basically worked
out... Did they take into account the length of each episode?
Yes, of course.
He's basically
people
worked
people be crazy, Rob. People be crazy and they do crazy things like this.
Mm. Recently, there was an episode about... a tortoise named Tank who had to hibernate. And this was apparently the first time Rainbow Dash has had to go through this. So it was obviously the first winter when she had Tank. So from that, we've worked out from the point where she got Tank to the point now and how many episodes that took.
Yeah, but it's just on some of the episodes, they've had like day-night cycle. They've gone through day, then night, then day within the episode. But on other episodes, they've gone through the entire episode where it's just been like the same day or like the same afternoon or the same race even.
It's TV logic, isn't it? It's
yeah, just... that's why I was like, how long is 1,000 years? Let's work this out properly, Bronies. Get your mathematician Bronies onto it. Work it out properly.
So anyway, yeah, it's basically...
They could be doing worse things. It
is the main six talking with Chrysalis, and they're basically going over different things that she's done. Like, they talk about the takeover of Timbuktu. It was, like, a huge trading base in the Pegasus world, and she basically destroyed it in a day.
Wait, Timbuktu on Earth, Timbuktu.
Oh, no, it's a cloud city.
Okay, so this isn't like some nightmare future where we've all been wiped out by ponies.
And it's a cloud city. There wasn't like a pony version of Lando Calrissian running it, was there?
Actually, I think there might actually be in one of the other... There's a lot of stuff like that, like hidden in the backgrounds of a lot of the MLP comics. Like I said before, yeah. The Big Lebowski's been in there. Slenderman's been in the actual TV show.
Yeah.
Doctor Who appears every so often.
Slenderman on a short.
Yeah, he appears hiding in the forest.
Not functioning, shutting down.
So he talks about like how she escaped a volcano prison, how she fought with Celestia, and a load of like huge things that she's done. And it's sort of. She had a lot of characteristics in the episode she appeared in, but since she was only in for two episodes, didn't get that much fleshing out. So now you get to see how much of a badass she actually is.
Okay.
And at the end of this, she actually manages to escape from the prison. And so I'm hoping the comics are going to carry on with Chrysalis, because she's one of my favorite bad guys, and I want to see more of her. So overall, I think, other than Sirens, all these comics are really good. I do not recommend them for non-pony fans, though, because it is ponies. And
are you sure I'm not going to absolutely love them?
Don't you?
Sure it's not going to break my brain just witnessing all the ponies playing their instruments with their hooves. Their hooves that can't play instruments.
Don't you? If you took the ponies out, people would probably enjoy these. Because they're good stories, they're well written. If they were humans doing it, people would probably be fine with it. But the fact is, ponies sort of turns people off.
Yeah, I can see why. It's just basically, for a lot of people, it is basically My Little Pony. Oh, it's that little girl thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, finally, you've got the last round of comics, Andrew.
Yes, I do. I have... both Ant-Man and Rocket Raccoon that I can quickly talk about.
Yes,
yes, so, I can help you talk about Ant-Man because I'm loving Ant-Man.
Cool, so I will just quickly go through Rocket Raccoon. It's, I think, the last issue in the series, which I don't know what they're doing after Secret Wars, but they're definitely ending it for that, like they're ending everything else.
They can't be ending Rocket. Rocket.
They better not. It's awesome because it's written by Scotty Young, who's like more known for doing variant covers, kind of like of the baby Marvel characters. But he also writes just a really fun comic book.
Maybe they're stopping the Rocket Raccoon because they're starting Groot soon and they want Rocket in Groot.
Yeah, and I know they're doing Groot for Secret, but I'm not sure like what their post-Secret Wars plans are. But I hope it comes back because it is one of my favorite comics. It's just because he's basically like Han Solo, but a raccoon.
That yeah. is the greatest description I've ever
well,
heard.
Well, no, he is like Han Solo, but crossed with Mr. T. He's got the engineering skills and the ability to build anything out of junk.
Yeah.
That just happens to be lying around. And he happens to carry a welding torch with him wherever he goes.
Because who shouldn't have a welding torch with
exactly.
him?
Exactly.
A welding torch and an itchy trigger finger.
Remember, they always used to find in the A-Team all of those...
what do you call the raccoons? Paw.
Paw.
Yeah, paw.
Itchy claw.
Yeah.
Yeah, itchy trigger claw. Remember in the A-Team, they used to be trapped inside like this rusty, rickety old barn that's falling apart. But oh look, there's a generator powering an arc welder, and there are these random bits of metal lying around that we can use to turn the van into a tank.
Yes, if only the villains hadn't left that arc welder on again.
Yes. Anyway, Rocket.
But yeah, Rocket Raccoon. It's awesome. So this is the issue where basically he finally gets his hands on like a book that has what his origin is, because like one of the main things in the series is Rocket Raccoon doesn't know who he is.
Who am I?
And so this, he finally finds out like the entire history of his people, and like it's great because there's basically a montage of him just reading through the book, and he gets bored. He gets bored because it's a long book,
yep.
filled with much confusing details.
Yes.
That sounds like Rocket.
Yeah. And then he realizes that basically all the money he used to buy the book was the money he was supposed to pay back his princess ex-girlfriend who he stole from.
Okay.
So yeah, and that's how Rocket Raccoon ends.
All right.
I think that's a perfect ending.
Yeah. Although actually, like, the final scene is great because he ends up back in prison, but it's like the same prison that he starts the series in.
Oh, look, that's cool.
So maybe it's the same one with Howard the Duck. No, that's how that's going.
No, I think that's a different prison. But it's great because, like, this issue is called Bookends because it's the end of the book.
Yeah.
And so the ending is a bookend to the start of the book. It's like,
cool.
I like that pun. Anyway, then there's Ant-Man, which is issue 5. And this deals with the end of the first big storyline. So basically, Ant-Man is fighting Darren Cross, who just coincidentally happens to be the guy who's going to be the villain in the Ant-Man movie. Doesn't that sync up nicely and coincidentally?
Yeah.
He's one of the big villains. He's a logical one to start the movie series with.
Yeah. Plus, I think it's a good way to kind of introduce the character for this series. But yeah, it's been a fun book because it's kind of one of the nice comedy books that Marvel do.
Yeah.
Now with Little Child's Heart.
Yes.
He's all basically what happened is Cross has taken the heart of Ant-Man's daughter because he had a condition where no heart could really handle his strength, and so he kept needing to replace it with homeless people's. But Ant-Man's
homeless
daughter's
people's
heart,
he doesn't shove whole homeless people in his
He could do. Maybe they're just like in little treadmills inside.
He's big enough. He could have a homeless person live inside. Say Ant-Man's daughter's heart can shrink and.
And also grow, so
like
it can,
as need be. So the idea was with that heart, you'd be fine. But ends up he's getting shrinking powers.
Yes, he accidentally just shrinks down to microscopic size. And Ant-Man just kind of picks him up.
So yeah, Ant-Man, it's very interesting. More than anything, I'm liking the side characters, like Grizzly.
Yes, like Grizzly and Machine Smith.
Yeah, they're just really amusing.
Yeah, I think because Nick Spencer, before this, he did a series called Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which was about these, like, really minor, low-level Spider-Man villains, like Boomerang and the Beetle.
The Beetle?
Yeah. Have you noticed this, like, in the previous issues, not so much in this one, they seem to really like Hawkeye. Like, everyone's always talking about how awesome Hawkeye is.
Yeah, like, I think that's kind of an in-joke with Marvel because of how well the Hawkeye series has done.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he's a good comic. I'm loving Ant-Man just because he's so normal.
Yeah.
Like, he's coming across as a normal guy. It's the reason I like the Hawkeye comics.
Yeah, because they're normal people trying to do their best.
Yeah.
I think what is interesting is the fact that he has a daughter. Like Marvel said before, like they won't let Spider-Man get married because they don't want to age the character. Like, this really proves you can have an older superhero and it still works quite well.
Oh, yeah. Totally. I mean, Slade Wilson's prime example.
Yeah, one of my favourite DC characters and guys old as balls.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd call him a hero, though.
Well, as a character.
It depends who's paying him.
That's true.
Yes, this is true. Right, I think we've reached the end of the show there, guys.
Yeah.
Unless we've missed anything. So, yes, we have been a four panel. I've been Rob.
I've been Ben.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all again next week for more comic-y goodness and maybe some manga mayhem in between.
Yay.
Woo.